Republican, dated Wednesday, December 13, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of Courts, Police, and Fire. The headline reads, Teen Found, Then Mom is Arrested. A Bement mom who reported her daughter missing was arrested herself after police say she had contact with that same daughter 3 days into a 15-day search for the supposedly missing child. Amanda Huddleston Hall had called Piatt County Sheriff's Police on November 20th to report that her daughter, Savannah Banks, 15, was missing. Sheriff's personnel, along with City of Champaign officers and the U.S. Marshal's Office, eventually found Banks December 5th, safe in Champaign. But officials say they discovered later that Huddleston Hall had spent Thanksgiving with her daughter in Farmer City, just 3 days after reporting her missing. Even after the holiday get-together, Piatt County Sheriff's Deputy Tom Epperson said Huddleston Hall, 39, called police daily to inquire about the investigation. The most frustrating thing about this is Mom could have put an end to this on Thanksgiving. But even after they were together, she didn't call to report she had located her daughter, said Epperson. Even after that, she continued to contact her office on multiple occasions and came out to meet with Sheriff David Hunt, asking, "Have you found my daughter yet?" he added. Banks was found shortly after 2 p.m. on Tuesday, December 5th, at an apartment near Parkland College in Champaign. "She wasn't abducted, and we didn't feel she was endangered. There was someone taking care of her," said Hunt, when she was located. 2 days later, Huddleston Hall was arrested and charged with obstructing justice, disorderly conduct, both Class 4 felonies, and endangering the life and health of a child, a Class A misdemeanor. She was formally arraigned in Piatt County Court on December 11th, and at press time, remained in Piatt County Jail on $25,000 bond. Epperson said Urbana Police also helped in the investigation. Our next front-page article is under the banner of Cisco Fire Department, and the headline reads, Cisco Fire Chief to Retire has headed department for 2 decades. Ron Weishar is being lauded for his vision, communication, and dedication as Fire Chief of the Cisco Fire Department for the last 2 decades. He is retiring from that long-held position at the end of this year, but will continue to serve as a volunteer firefighter and trustee. "He's been tremendous for the department. He really has," said Stan Severs, president of the Fire Department's Board of Trustees. "His communication skills are tremendous. He communicates with the trustees and also with the firefighters as well," added Severs. Weishar started with the department as a firefighter in January of 1981. Became assistant chief under Larry Edwards in 1992 and chief in August of 1997. 20 years in a position like this is long enough. It's time other people get broken in, and I've tried to do my best to get other people prepared for that," said Weishar, who retired as the director of Piatt Tran in 2010. He is proud there are 26 volunteers for a department located in a town of just 257 people. "For a small town department, I'm pretty proud of that." And this under the heading of Firehouse, one date that will stick in Weishar's mind for a pair of reasons is September 11, 2001. Nationally, it was the day terrorists flew planes into New York's Twin Towers, but in Cisco, it was the day work began to convert the former elementary school into the Cisco Center. With the elementary school building unoccupied, the 1900 portion was torn down, and the 1936 gym and 1956 annex remodeled to house the fire department, Willow Branch Public Library, and Piatt County Head Start. There was a lot of criticism for that. It was a controversial decision to locate the fire department there, said Weishar, but it has worked out well. He also has high regard for his colleagues in other departments, most notably the mutual aid system that has developed during his years on the department. For example, a complicated house fire last March ended up with 10 departments being called out and 52 firemen battling the blaze. He's also proud of the cadet system he introduced about a decade ago that allows those under 21 years of age to serve on the department. Their only restrictions are they cannot answer calls on the interstate and are banned from going into a building that has an active fire. A lot of departments are kind of aging out, said Wyshar. We got a lot of kids in through the cadet program, and the trustees were kind enough to say they didn't have to live in the district to be a cadet. That was a pretty bold move for them, but boy, we got a lot of kids. Some have gone on as full-time firefighters. A number of them have stayed with the department. Wyshar has seen plenty of changes in his 36 years at the department. One is the way volunteers are called out, now by pager and cell phone. When I first joined the department, we had what they called a ring-down system. The phone would go ring, 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 ring. That's when you knew you had a fire call. We didn't have pagers at that point, he said. Fire department trustees have named Matt Wilhelm as its new fire chief. He has served as a firefighter for Cisco since 2006. It's a great honor to take this position. I'll do my best to fill his shoes, said Wilhelm. Finally, from the front page, we have this article under the banner of religion. And the headline reads, Chorus, Combined Chorus to Perform. Special church services will be held on Sunday, December 17th, when the choirs of First Presbyterian and the United Methodist Church combine their voices. Both choirs will perform at the 8:30 a.m. service at the Methodist Church, and then will perform at the 10 a.m. service at the Presbyterian Church. The Presbyterians will have their regular worship service at 10 a.m. on Sunday, December 24th, and will also have their traditional Christmas Eve candlelight service at 7 p.m. that evening. All are invited to attend those services as we celebrate the birth of the Savior. Turning now to page A2, we have this article headlined, Beautiful Beads and Baubles opens in Cerro Gordo. Beautiful Beads and Baubles held its grand opening at 207 East South Street in Cerro Gordo on Saturday, December 9th, by offering refreshments, goodie bags, and by displaying its main product, beads. Shannon Luthy, store owner and bead enthusiast, has beads of all different colors for sale individually, as well as creative jewelry and art. Everyone doesn't wear jewelry, but everyone can enjoy beads, said Luthy. Luthy adds that she hopes to hold weekly beading classes in the future to teach others how to bead. Hopes are to start the classes next month after the holiday rush. Jan Von Bokel sells unique jewelry pieces made from metal at Beautiful Beads and Baubles. Luthy would like to host other artists as well. Beading jewelry, everyone does it so differently, so it's not like the same thing. I would like to have a variety of people come in and bring their work, because a lot of them do things that I can't do, she said. Luthy also hopes the classes can be for the person that knows nothing about it, as to the person that knows how to read a pattern to something of your own type of thing, adding, I can do custom if you want to learn how to do something. I have the supplies. As for what got Luthy into beading, she states, I've always played around. I like to make things. Anything I can make, I'll try it. I'll try anything once. She joked with her son that she's been messing with beads for as long as he can probably remember. Before Luthy took over the building, it was owned by a few different local businesses. The main businesses passed, featured tanning, video, and at one point, tools. Walking in the door, one can see it is not any longer a tanning salon. Luthy states that getting the place ready was a family effort. Her sons, mother-in-law, and husband all aided in getting the business to full operation. Luthy has repurposed items she found during town cleanup days and things no longer wanted to use as display shelves. The shelves were made from a combination of shutters, a few 2x4s, crib posts, and chair railings. Beautiful Beads and Baubles will be open through the week, Tuesdays through Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Still on page A2, we have this article. It's under the banner of business, and the headline reads, Boot Camp Winner Set to Start Meat Shop. A retail meat shop will be added to the downtown shopping options in Monticello, hopefully sometime next spring. Andrew and Rebecca Bradley of Champaign, the winners of the fall session of the City of Monticello's Business Boot Camp Session, will call their business Sangamon Meats and Sausage Company. It is named after the Sangamon River that runs through the community. We're going to try to provide people with farm-fresh meat, antibiotic-free, farm-raised, pork, beef, and chicken, said Andrew Bradley, who has 8 years in the food processing and restaurant industry. We will have a sales lobby. When you come in, there will be fresh meat cases with product on display, so you'll be able to select which steak you want, and then we'll wrap it up for you, he added, in visualizing the lobby of their future business. They will not butcher meat for now, but it could be added in the future. Rebecca currently stays at home with the couple's 4-month-old son, Logan, and brings plenty of experience to the table with past management posts in restaurants and food service companies. She's looking forward to hanging up the couple's shingle. I've always wanted to own a business of some kind, said Mrs. Bradley, who grew up in Champaign. She's also appreciative of the local business boot camp, which netted them a $5,000 grant towards rent or mortgage and utility bills as the winner of the fall of 2017 session. It gave us a good idea what to expect and contacts we can make, said Rebecca Bradley. It really helped us look at the financial side of things. It kind of pieced together the puzzle of how things mesh in starting a business, added Andrew, an Urbana native. The couple is closing in on a location for the startup, which will be in the downtown area. The five-session boot camp, business boot camps, have been offered twice per year since the spring of 2015. They have helped at least two businesses get started, the Zybel House Bakery, and Market, and Monarch Brewing Company. A third, Susie Lou's Cakes and Pastries, is also expected to open soon. Registration for the spring 2018 business boot camp will begin on January 2nd. For more information, go to www.cityofmonticello.net. Turning now to page A3, we have this article under the banner of Piatt County Nursing Home, and the headline reads, Interviews Start for Administrator. Piatt County officials are cutting costs at the county-owned nursing home, while at the same time looking for the facility's next director. A total of 11 applied for the opening, with that field being narrowed to 6 for possible interviews. That process began on Tuesday as the County Board Personnel Committee sat down with two candidates, one being current interim director, Scott Porter. County Board Chairman Randy Keith said the committee will then narrow the field to 2 or 3 for the full county board to consider. I'd love to have this put to bed in a couple of weeks, Keith said after a December 7th meeting of the Nursing Home Committee. The county fired Gary Coulter as the nursing home's executive director on October 6th. Since that time, the Nursing Home Committee and Porter have been cutting costs. 6 staff reductions, 2 in the therapy department, 2 in maintenance, 1 in nursing, and Coulter have trimmed the twice-monthly payroll costs from $204,000 to $183,000, said Porter. A decision to change the alternate compensation rate for employees will save additional dollars. The unique payment method allows employees to get paid at 130% of their hourly rate if they forego benefits offered by the county. Porter said a vast majority chose that option, pointing that in order to attract workers to its rural location, the starting pay for certified nursing assistants at Piatt County also starts at about $1.75 per hour above the state average. The county decided to change the alternate compensation rate to 120% and to 110% for employees hired from this point on. The nursing home is also advertising for a new director of nursing to replace Lisa Bogle, who will leave at the end of the year, and a dietary director to replace Donna Goad, who recently resigned. Despite the staff cutbacks, the committee decided to create a new position they hope will promote the nursing home and increase the number of residents at the 100-bed facility from its current 78. One of the main duties of the new admissions and marketing director will be to get the facility closer to capacity. I think we need to act now to find that person to go out and sell the product, Porter said. I feel there's really no reason to wait. If we get that right person, that census number of residents is going to be the other piece of this. My question is, would this person going to plan a strategy and marketing campaign or carry out what somebody else has developed? Asked Nursing Home Committee member Ray Spencer. Maple Point Assisted Living Director Kara Olson responded it would be a combined effort between her facility, the adjacent nursing home, and Faith in Action Director Julie Glowy. We would develop an overall marketing plan for us where we would all be working together. We would each have our areas to focus on, said Olson. The committee unanimously recommended the new position, which was expected to be considered by the full county board on December 13th. And this under the heading of lunch meetings. Porter said he held his first Lunch with Scott lunch meeting recently, where 7 employees showed up to give input on the nursing home's focus and operations. Porter was really impressed with how it went, saying most of the discussion was on how to better patient care. He plans to continue meeting with employees each Friday. Turning now to page A4, this article is under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, Fundraising to Begin on Schunkweiler Memorial. The next step in erecting a memorial gazebo for late County Judge John Schunkweiler will be for the Piatt County Board to approve the use of a portion of the courthouse lawn for that purpose. It is likely just a formality due to the amount of respect the 40-year judge has in Monticello, but Piatt County Sheriff David Hunt felt it was the logical next step. We need to push a vote to the county board to allow it to be put on courthouse grounds. We've got a contractor in mind. We've got an account set up at First State Bank for donations, but I think officially we probably should have an okay from the county board before we move forward on building it, Hunt said at the December 6th meeting of the county board's Building and Grounds Committee. The committee voted to endorse the land use, which now needs a final approval by the full county board. The board already approved a budget of up to $25,000 to purchase the gazebo kit, which at this point would likely be put together with volunteer labor. A plaque honoring the judge, who served from 1972 until his death in 2012, and was chief judge for the Sixth County Judicial Circuit Court, for 18 years. An Illinois bicentennial flag has been sent to the county, and the committee decided it will be displayed under the state flag at the public safety building. That is because there are 2 flagpoles outside that structure, and it is the only county one that currently flies a state flag. In other action, the committee heard the ceiling at portions of the Piatt County Mental Health Center is being repaired and flooring in the mail and break room replaced. A second hallway railing for the developmental services area has also been installed. They were told by County Maintenance Supervisor Scott Stevenson that some adjustments have been made at the Piatt County office building after a recent ADA inspection. Most of the 6 findings had to do with the need for signage. Others, such as replacing a 24-inch grab bar in the accessible restroom to a 36-inch, lowering coat hooks and insulating pipes under the restroom sink, have already been completed by county staff. And now turning to page A5, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Kenneth Richard Barenthan, 66, of Monticello, passed from this world to his heavenly home on December 8, 2017. Ken was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota on May 24, 1951. His parents were Al and Ruth Heron Barenthan, both deceased. services will be held at Mackie Wright Funeral Home, 215 East Washington Street in Monticello. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, December 16, 2017, with memorial celebration immediately after. Lillian Faye Maloney, 84, of Monticello, passed away on Thursday, December 7, 2017. A visitation was held at the Monticello First Christian Church at 1 p.m. on Thursday, December 14, with the funeral at 2 p.m., with interment to follow at Monticello Township Cemetery. Maxine Riley, 93, of Aledo, Illinois, formerly of Monticello, died Saturday, December 9, 2017, at Genesis Senior Living in Aledo. Cremation has been accorded, and memorial services were Wednesday, December 13, 2017, at the United Methodist Church in Aledo. Visitation was from 9 a.m. until time of services Wednesday at the church. Burial was at 11 a.m. Thursday, December 14, 2017, at the Monticello Township Cemetery in Monticello. Memorials may be left to the Genesis Senior Living Activities Department, the Mercer County YMCA, or the Aledo United Methodist Church. Wilma L. Eads, 92, of Orianna, Illinois, passed away at 5:26 a.m. on Wednesday, December 6, 2017, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. Funeral services were held at 12 noon on Saturday, December 9, 2017, at the Hines Funeral Home, 348 North Piatt Street in Bement, with Pastor Marcia Frederick officiating. Visitation was from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Saturday, December 7, 2017, also at the funeral home. Burial was in the Bement Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Diabetes Association. And now returning to the news and views on page A4 under the banner of City of Monticello, we have this article headlined, Uncertainty Over City Rec Project. As money becomes tight, some Monticello City Council members are having a crisis of faith when it comes to the city's proposed 30-acre recreation complex. Late last year, the Monticello City Council expressed support for developing the city-owned land into a recreation complex, but as it considered a deficit 2018 budget this past Monday, at least one alderman suggested selling the property if the city can't afford to develop it. A $41,250 price tag for rec site engineering work was added to next year's budget, but not without concern whether the city could afford the estimated $2.5 million eventually needed to build baseball, softball, football, and soccer fields. The engineering work will also update the cost for converting the farmland just west of the Apple Tree subdivision into a large park that would also include a walking path and fishing pond. When we get more information about the cost of developing the 30 acres, if that doesn't work out, I think we should sell it and use that money for infrastructure projects, said Alderman John Miller. Last year, the idea of putting the issue on the ballot for possible public input and/or funding was floated, but that idea did not resurface Monday. And looking at a budget that has a general fund approximately $300,000 in the red and fewer capital projects than normal, Alderman Joe Brown questioned the funding of engineering studies not only for the recreation site, but another $30,000 to study an extension of water and sewer lines to the other side of old Route 47. We're going to spend $70,000 in engineering for projects we can't afford, said Brown, who was the only dissenting vote when the council voted to continue pursuit of the recreation complex at a meeting in November of last year. Businesses are expected to drop for the city next year, mostly due to an anticipated $200,000 decrease in corporate personal property replacement tax proceeds. Alderman Seth Melton said that is the very reason the city may have to spend some money to encourage growth in the community. We need growth, and sometimes that means spending money on engineering, said Melton. new homes, bring in new property taxes, and then there are more sales generating sales tax revenue. You can't just keep trimming and trimming the budget. You have to have plans to increase the revenue. With the Illinois Department of Transportation footing half of the engineering cost of the old Route 47 proposal, city leaders have said the utility extension could open up land to the west for possible commercial development. As for the recreation site, Melton estimated last year that hosting 6-team tournaments, 10 weekends per year, would bring in $648,000 annually to the local economy. Alderman Jeremy Jones suggested the budget planning process begin earlier next year, and Wendell Brock said if revenues do not improve, the city may need to raise its levy past the 4.9% it typically approves. I hope it doesn't come to that, added Brock. The council approved the 2018 budget by a 5-1 vote with Brown dissenting. Alderman also approved a property tax levy for 2018 of $660,800, which is 4.9% more than last year's levy. And in other business, the council approved a change to allow for same-day processing of city payments if needed. A change in state law now allows it. Approved the abatement and abolition of taxes for Special Service Area 2, which helped fund sewer extensions to Apple Tree. That project has been paid for. They were informed a total of 46 youth took part in Monticello Police Department's Shop with a Cop event on Saturday, December 9th, and they canceled the second council meeting for the month of December. Next up is on page A5. This article is entitled Rate Drop for Ameren. The Illinois Commerce Commission, ICC, recently issued an order authorizing Ameren Illinois Company, Ameren Illinois, to decrease electric delivery service rates by $17.3 million annually, which is a decrease of 1.71%. A general-use residential customer who uses approximately 10,000 kilowatt-hours annually would save approximately $20 per year. But the actual impact on an individual's customer's bill will vary depending on the type of customer and amount of energy used. The new rates will become effective with the first January 2018 billing cycle. Ameren Illinois initially proposed a rate decrease of $16.3 million, but the commission made adjustments to the company's affiliate costs, lobbying costs, deferred charges, projected plant additions, and cash working capital. The commission's order, docket number 17-0197, is the result of a thorough review during the past 8 months of the formula rate case filing the company made on April 13, 2017. The review involved two main components. One, a reconciliation of Ameren's actual 2016 revenue requirements, and two, a determination of the new revenue requirement that includes the company's projected 2017 plant additions. The net effect will be reflected in the rates to be charged in 2018. Electric distribution rates for companies like Ameren Illinois are set annually pursuant to the Energy Infrastructure Modernization Act, EIMA. In 2011, EIMA established a prescribed formula rate procedure for Ameren Illinois to recover actual, prudently incurred costs for the delivery of electricity to customers. For more information regarding the rate case, it may be found in the fact sheet that is in this paper. This has been the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, December 13, 2017. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.